You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. Strong one to end the series on there.
That was very well done, very well executed.
Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. You join us for the last time in a little while. We're going to have one of those end of series breaks. We've treated ourselves to one before, but it was only actually about 5 or 6 weeks. This one will be a tad longer. But we couldn't go without just doing a roundup of things happening in the universe of Doctor Who. So we've got a trailer for a new series that's upcoming to talk about. And we have got plenty of Big Finish that's been released over the last few months that we haven't really discussed yet. So we're mopping up, basically, with this one. So I'm Johnston and I am joined by Connor. Hello, Connor.
Hello.
And here we go, end of the second series and our 101st episode.
I know. It both feels like a very long time ago that we sat down to talk about Legend of the Sea Devils, and it also feels like yesterday.
Of course, that's what we did start with, isn't it? Legend of the Sea Devils.
That was our number one. We talked about a lot of different Sea Devil stories.
Yes, I think it was our first one.
Like the night after that special went out, so it's pretty much bang on 2 years ago.
Yeah, must be. But yeah, we're still here. We're still talking about Doctor Who, Big Finish, and many, many other things as well. But we are focusing. We're doing a Doctor Who-y one today. We're focusing on all of that. So there's an awful lot happening, really, because the new series isn't that far off. So we've had the trailer for a few weeks now. It's kind of sunk in. We've all had the chance to think about it. What are your thoughts on that trailer for series? What is it? Season one? Season one, isn't it?
I think I heard this on another podcast, but if you go onto Wikipedia and type in season one Doctor Who, it takes you to like the original, like Unearthly Child season. And then there's a wee disclaimer at the top. It says, if you're looking for series one of the revived Doctor Who, it's series one. And it takes you to the Christopher Eccleston series. It says, if you're looking for the 2024 series marketed as series one, it takes you to Doctor Who series 14. So it's a little all over the place.
But, so we've had a trailer for that series.
out in the next few weeks, or the one that's starting in the next few weeks. I'm excited. I think it's fair to say that the 60th stuff and Church on Ruby Road didn't quite land for me. I think my excitement took a little bit of a knock, but I think we're now really getting into the swing of the Bad Wolf stuff, and the two trailers that have come out, the Disney Plus one and the BBC one, have been very exciting. Shudi Gatwa and Millie Gibson both clearly look like they have a lot of energy and seem like they're going to be an awful lot of fun. But I'm excited by some of the villains that we've seen in this series, or that we've seen for this series so far, particularly the Maestro, who's played by Jinx Monsoon. So that's not a spoiler or anything. Russell T. Davies announced that earlier this week, I think, that Jinx Monsoon is playing a character called the Maestro. And I am going to be that guy and, you know, put my hand, you know, put my cards on the table now and say, I think this is going to be a musical version of The Master. Or not that I think it's going to be, I hope it's a musical version of The Master. Because there's a shot in one of the trailers of her coming out of the top of a piano. She's sort of climbing up out of it. And I just want a piano TARDIS to be a thing, and I want this to be The Master come for a sing-song, because I think that would be the most camp thing ever to happen in Doctor Who's history. But it all seems to be very grand, and there's a few things in here that look like callbacks, and I don't know if it's a deliberate thing or not, but there's a couple of shots of the Doctor and Ruby coming out of the TARDIS into like a ruined version of London. And there's talk of, there's a few shots where Earth seems to have been consumed by dust. I'm wondering, it seems like a very deliberate callback to Pyramids of Mars and Sutekh, because the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane, you know, the Fourth Doctor takes her back to her own time and shows her what would happen if Sutekh is left to run riot. That looks very similar to what the Doctor and Ruby are doing in this trailer. And I know Russell has said that it's all going to go sort of a bit gods and monsters and more into the supernatural. I'm wondering if it's possible that Sutekh is going to be in this series in some form or other. It would be nice. It would be, I think Sutekh's quite cool. None of this is going to happen, because this is just me looking at it with my fan brain and saying, oh, that looks like that thing from 1970, whatever. But it looks exciting. I'm excited for the Beatles episode. And I'm just excited for it. I hope it's good.
I think that there's, I watched that trailer and it did sort of take me back to the trailers for the original Russell T. Davies run. And I don't think trailers have ever been as good as they were for those first sort of four series. I sort of remember one and two very, very vividly.
Feels very similar, like Shooty talking straight down the camera, doesn't it? Like the Trip of a Lifetime trailer and the...
Yeah.
There's a couple where David Tennant's doing the same thing. It does feel very reminiscent of those.
And so there's a nice little bit of nostalgia there as well. And I think there's a lot of just sort of that nostalgia feeling there back, you know, sort of 2005, 2006. But I think actually what we're going to get is something quite different. If particularly Church of Ruby Road is anything to go by, I think that maybe we are on for something just a little bit different, a little bit more maybe story arc focused. Like Russell T. Davies, yes, we had story arcs the first time round, but they were very loose. It was a word or a theme. This feels as though that there are going to be some real mysteries and things to investigate running through the series. But we're not going to be sacrificing that sort of fantastic, you know, new place every week, new location every week, thing that makes Doctor Who so brilliant and unique. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't say that this is the most excited I've ever been about a series, because series one came around when I was 12 and I was the only person I knew my age at least that had seen Doctor Who before. So it's not quite capturing that sort of childhood excitement, but there's definitely something there. I'm definitely sort of sat back and ready to watch it now, ready to see what comes next and how different this new era is going to be, how similar this new era is going to be, and how fun it's going to be, I think.
Do you know what? I think rather than saying I'm excited for this, I think I have the potential to be excited for it, if that makes sense. Or it's like I'm looking at things in the trailer, I'm saying, oh, that looks really exciting. I hope it is in the final version, you know. Like characters like Maestro, like this Bridgerton episode, you get a little bit of a glimpse. It's not a full look, but you sort of get a glimpse at the villains from it. You've got Jonathan Groff's character. I think I'm looking at these different elements and going, yes, I get why this is supposed to feel exciting. I hope it sticks that landing. I hope it works as well in the actual episode as it looks in this trailer. I think it's safer to say I have the potential to be excited if it stands up in the final episodes. And we'll see how that goes once it starts going out.
It could go very, very well. Let's say that. But yeah, I'm just glad that there is new Doctor Who and that it does have the potential to reach a larger audience than ever. And, you know, this could be what introduces a whole new generation of kids to it. This could potentially be the keystone for us having Doctor Who for another 10, 15 years. And as somebody, you know, I was very young when, Doctor Who came back, but I'd seen a lot of classic stuff, and kind of my initial reaction, particularly to the first two series, were, oh, I'm not sure I like this. This is maybe a bit too different. But now I can look back on those first two series and go, yeah, it was worth it for what came after. For me, New Who properly kicked in at series three. But I've gained an appreciation for one and two that maybe I didn't quite have the first time round. And I suspect that this may do the same. Like, maybe it's not going to be my cup of tea straight away, but when I see what it does, what the aftermath is, what comes from it, maybe I'll start to sort of look at it and go, yeah, I can see why we needed version A of New Doctor Who before we got version B, which I liked a little bit more. So we'll see. We'll see.
It would be nice if it were good. It would be nice if I liked it.
Yes. It would be nice if everybody liked it and the internet calmed itself down a little bit. But
you definitely get the sense that there's an idea and a direction behind this run. Like, I think they've been very forthright about what they want to go in and do. It's just that what they've done so far hasn't been to my tastes, and I'm apprehensive about it going forward. I want to like it. I want to enjoy it. I'm going in with the mindset, like, yes, new Doctor Who, let's sit down and enjoy it. I just hope that carries through, and, you know, once I've actually seen it.
Well, and how's this for a segue? Thankfully, if TV Doctor Who's not quite your thing, we've got Big Finish. See what I did there?
This is very, and that's the whole reason I got into Big Finish in the first place. They took Doctor Who off the air, and I started listening to the audio stuff because I didn't want to give it up for a year.
Yeah. Well, the good news is Big Finish is still going strong, and I feel as though we've mentioned it in coffee bar episodes. We've kind of changed the format that we discuss Big Finish, I guess, on this podcast over the last few months. But I did want to do sort of a nice, solid Big Finish roundup. Recent releases before we finish this series, and I feel as though we've maybe not talked recent Big Finish releases as much as we used to, perhaps at all this year, perhaps since Christmas. So with that in mind, I thought we could go out on the high of just discussing some of our favourite Big Finish releases of 2024 so far. So what would you say have been your standout Big Finish releases over the last few months?
This is blatant favouritism, but, and it's just because it's local, Doctor Who and the Battle of Giant's Causeway. I've waited 15, 16 years. It's longer. It's actually nearly 20 years now. Oh my God. I've waited 20 years since becoming a Doctor Who fan for them to do something in Northern Ireland. And finally, I've got it, which is the Eighth Doctor, Charlie and Kerry's coming to the Giant's Causeway and battling some Suntarans and some Rutans. So that's a standout. I think we'll maybe talk about it more, the Suntarans and Rutan stuff. But a very quick mention, that was the first release of the year, at least on my account. And it's not yet been toppled from the top spot just by virtue of being at the Giant's Causeway. But there's been some strong stuff. I really liked the Fourth Doctor adventures with Naomi and Harry. It feels good to finally get the start of their adventures. And I think the quality really held up with the latest classic Doctor's New Monsters set, which did the thing I've wanted to happen for ages in the Doctors meeting the Silence, some of the classic Doctors meeting the Silence. So a very easy one to highlight out for me as a favourite. What about you?
I'm definitely going to download the sort of Trial of a Time Lord sound effect when a bit of information is excised from the Matrix and just play it over you talking about Giant's Causeway.
Chris Chibnall broke my heart by making that on Matrix, by making the only time Doctor Who has come to Ireland on TV a Matrix projection, and you break my heart every time you mention it and remind me of it.
Which is why I keep mentioning it and reminding me of it.
It's so depressing.
So, big finish highlights for me so far this year. I have to admit, my two favourite releases have come in the last month or so, I think. I've really enjoyed a lot of what we had. You know, I really enjoyed Sontarans versus Rutans, really enjoyed Classic Doctor's New Monsters, all the other stuff that we're going to talk about. Torchwood has been sort of nice and consistently strong as ever. We've not had a dud Torchwood for I don't know how long. I wouldn't even want to sort of guess. You know, just the consistency of Torchwood is still incredible. I said this when we first started this podcast. We did a Torchwood episode. I think it was episode 3 or 4, something like that. And I said then it's ridiculous how high Big Finish's Torchwood hit rate is, how it just keeps churning out really good Torchwood stuff. And it's still doing that. I've particularly recently enjoyed Sabotage and Poppet. But that's just to pick out two favourites from a really good bunch, as opposed to pick out stuff that's better than normal kind of thing. But my two favourite releases so far this year, I think, would be The Sixth Doctor Adventures, The Quinn Dilemma, which was a really, really nice celebration of pretty much all of The Sixth Doctor's era, or as much of it as can be fit into a 3-hour box set. The other one is, at the time of recording, this isn't even a week old, this release, but it's The Dream Team, The Fifth Doctor Adventures. It's the season 19 crew, and the first story in particular, the Merfolk Murders, is a kind of locked door, Agatha Christie inspired murder mystery. And it's so much fun. But again, we'll go into that in a little bit when we talk about it more. I kind of feel as though the best stuff's actually come very recently, but that's not to take away from what we've had already so far this year. So let's start off with Sontarans versus Rutans then, which has been a monthly series. We seem to be returning to monthly series after being told they were terrible and we all had to have box sets now. Monthly series are back, and the first one of these is Sontarans versus Rutans, which I think's a lot of fun. It's kind of some loosely connected stories. We've not had the last one yet, I'll point out. At time of recording, and I think actually at the time of this episode's release, we won't have had the final one yet. But the three that we've had so far have been very nicely different and a great deal of fun. I know that Battle for Giant's Causeway was a favourite of yours, Connor, so I'll shut up and let you do all of that.
Well, yes, I loved it. It's great to have a story like Giant's Causeway, where I've been to see the Giant's Causeway more times than I can count. I go up and visit it pretty much any time I'm in that neck of the woods. So I can visualize exactly what the landscape around, around the causeway and where the characters are visiting. And it's amazing to have an audio that I know the area very vividly and can picture very vividly. So loved it, as I've said, because it comes to, my neck of the woods and comes to the Giant's Causeway and plays about with a bit of my country's history, which is lovely. But I think it's a great story as well. We've had Sontarans before, we've had Rutans before. I can only think of one story where we've had Sontarans and Rutans before. It's that Sixth Doctor Lost story, the first Sontarans. I don't know of any others. None are springing to mind, and I've been trying to think of others all morning. So I know we've had Suntarans, I know we've had Rutans. This series is doing something new, or at least very underappreciated or underdone in Doctor Who's history, by actually showing us conflict between the Suntarans and Rutans, which is their whole thing. And like, if a Rutan shows up, you're going to get a mention of the Suntarans. If a Suntaran shows up, you're pretty much bound to get a mention of the Rutans. It makes sense that we're finally getting it put together, and I like it's been done. I like that it has been done as this little event series. So it's great. I'm really enjoying it. I like, as I say, I really love the Battle of Giant's Causeway, but the others that have come out since with the Third Doctor crew, and with the Sixth Doctor and Charlie, have been great. I think Children of the Revolution probably is the best out of the run. I'm going to say this now because we'll come back to it later on, but I think Sadie Miller is Big Finish's secret weapon at the moment. I think everything she's in has been golden. She's just absolutely fantastic as Sarah Jane Smith, and seems to get better every single time she turns up. But it's a great wee story. It's creepy, sort of like, it's not quite Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but it's not far off either. And there's a couple of really lovely scenes in there as well between the Doctor and the Brigadier, but about the Doctor and the Brigadier as well. You've got the little scene with the Brigadier and Stanley in the corner shop, where they talk about their friends going away, and the Brigadier's terrified that the Doctor's going to leave soon and he's not going to know what to do with himself. So that's a real standout. I think that's great. The Charlie and Sixth Doctor one's great as well. It's always nice to hear those two back together again. But it's a great I like that that's sort of, I think it has the most direct Suntaran and Rutan conflict out of the three stories that have come out so far. And I quite enjoyed it. It was also nice to hear Christopher Ryan back as a Suntaran. I think he's only done one Big Finish before, I think. Maybe one or two. And then it sort of went all Dan Starkey for a while, and he's in this as well. But we get Christopher Ryan back, and John Coleshaw doing it as well, and it's nice to get that little bit of variety. As much as I love Dan Starkey and think he's amazing, and I'm always happy to hear him playing a Suntaran or two, I like getting the variety that that episode seemed to have sort of deliberately set out to achieve with the Suntaran voices, so that's great. I'm liking the story. I'm looking forward to listening through to them as a series, just to keep track of what's happening and how they're linking to each other. But we'll not be able to do that until we have the last one, which is with the War Doctor. And I'm looking forward to that. I think that's possibly going to come out fairly soon. So bring it on.
I'm not just correcting you to be snarky. It's Children of the Future, not Children of the Revolution. And I'm only bringing it up because I want to gush about it as well, and how much I love it and how great it is.
You're quite right. And I'm thinking of T-Rex.
Yes, you are. Yeah. Which, you know, slightly different things. But no, it was an absolute. I mean, I agree with you. The whole run has been great, but Children of the Future is the standout highlight for me. I think it really has just, it's taken an era of Doctor Who where there are things left unsaid, like, you know, the Brigadier and the Doctor kind of parting ways a little bit. And I suppose, you know, on screen at the time during season 11, we didn't really know that unit stories were numbered at that point. But it's great to have this sort of retroactive period of the Brigadier kind of dreading that the Doctor's going to stop coming back to Earth, and this story plays into that really well. And you know, Sarah's great in it. It's a lot of it is very Sarah and Brigadier led. The Doctor doesn't kind of become a main character in it until, I guess, the halfway point. I really like the way it's done, though, and I like the fact that there's this element of not being able to trust people, and, you know, roots and duplicates, that kind of thing. And it's something that has definitely been done with UNIT before. You know, we have had duplicates, we had Auton duplicates, we had Android duplicates, but it's this is done in a kind of different way. And I really like the way that they pulled it off. And yeah, it's definitely been a highlight of the year so far, and a highlight of a range that has been a highlight of the year so far. And I am enjoying this kind of monthly drip release, because then at some point further down the line, I can go back to it and listen to it all in one after having that sort of monthly wait at this point. Yeah, I've realised actually that I've kind of missed having individual releases like this with everything being box sets for the last few years. And hopefully they're going to find quite a nice balance now, because they do seem to be leaning towards some monthly releases. We're getting it with Dark Gallifrey. We're going to get it with Benny. And I think that this is an example of it holding up. I don't think I would have appreciated Children of the Future as much if I listened to it as story 2 of 4 over the course of 2 days, maybe. I think because it was the one for that month, I really got a chance to appreciate it a bit more.
I've mentioned this before on the show, but like, I think it's a great thing for them to have as like a tentpole release, almost. That's something that we as an audience can get excited for and anticipate on a month by month basis. That's how Doctor Who works, you know. On TV, you know, you have a series, it's not all coming out at once. I think it's a great way of building hype for something and for generating an engagement over a longer period of time. That all sounds very corporate speak. Long story short, I think it's really really exciting way to listen to something and to, for us, you know, to consume it as an audience, because you're getting that, you know, sort of enforced waiting time, where it's not something that a lot of Big Finish comes out and you almost feel like you have to binge it to engage in the conversation then, well, you know, about it. You know, I'm thinking of stuff like Legacy of Time. I felt like I had to get through it as quickly as I could so I wouldn't be spoiled on it and that I could listen to it properly. Whereas something like this, you're getting an episode out a month, and that excitement continues to build month on month because no one knows what's coming next. You know, like, sure, I could take a regular box set and listen to it an episode a week. By the time I've then finished it, first of all, if something major happens, it will be spoiled on me. But it also means then that if I have listened to something over 4 weeks, the conversation about it has happened 4 weeks ago when it came out, you know. I think this is a great way a really audience-friendly way of releasing things, and I'm all for it. I'm glad they're doing it more often now with Children, or not with Children of the Revolution, or Children of the Future, whatever it's called, with Sontarans versus Rutans, and with Dark Gallifrey. I'm all for it. I hope they continue to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully this is not quite the start. We had it with Once and Future last year, but hopefully this is sort of the start of perhaps a new kind of format, and these linked series like this will become a thing. But either way, this one is definitely working, and we're not going to go into it in too much detail in this episode because we've only had one release and there's going to be a lot of it, but Dark Gallifrey seems to be off to a pretty strong start as well. So let's keep doing these. It's something to look forward to each month, something continuing to look forward to each month, which I quite like. Another one worth discussing then, and this is another range we keep coming back to. It's a range that we keep singing the praises of, and it's a range that Big Finish seem to do consistently very, very well. And that's Classic Doctor's New Monsters. It's very easy, I think, to dismiss this as a pretty obvious format. Okay, yes, let's get the Fourth Doctor to battle, the Jagrafess, I don't know. But they're not quite doing it like that. It's not like it's sort of fixed up by Lucky Dip. There's genuine thought going into these pairings, into these stories. We're trying to make stories as different as possible from what was seen on TV for all of these new monsters. And I think it's working thoroughly well. And this latest set is as strong as the other three. So Classic Doctor's New Monsters 4. Talk to me about that.
Well, these last two sets, it feels like they've really perfected the format. I think the first two ones did feel a little more like you know, classic Who meets New Who. It's the big heavy hitter monsters. It's people like the Jadoon and the Weeping Angels and all the big iconic ones. The more recent couple of sets, volumes 3 and 4, they've gone looking for slightly more obscure or less well-known monsters, I think. Now, the Silence are obviously an exception here, but picking up, you know, like in set 3, they had the Tivoli, they had the Dream Crabs. I like this. I really like it, and the most recent couple of sets have done a really good thing in bringing companions into the mix. And I think that has lifted it as well, because it feels chunkier when you have a companion alongside the Doctor. It feels a bit more proper Doctor Who, you know. It's very rare to get a Doctor on their own on TV. It's a bit more common on audio, but I like that we're getting companions in here. The big one in this story is, this is the very first originally written Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith story that Big Finish have done. Any time they've been in, that we've had the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane on Big Finish before, it has been either a script that was repurposed from TV through the Lost stories, or in Once in Future's case, you know, spoilers, it wasn't actually the Fourth Doctor. It was a degenerated version of the War Doctor. This is the first time that we've had a brand new Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane story, and it was brilliant to hear them. Tom Baker and Sadie Miller work so well together, and I thought it was really joyous to hear that team again in something new, something brand new. So major plus to that. I thought they worked so well right from the off. I'd said it earlier on and I'll say it again now, Sadie Miller is absolutely Big Finish's secret weapon. I just thought it was brilliant. Their story seems to sort of play a little bit on sort of like Brain of Morbius imagery. You get, you know, there's a couple of similarities there that almost feel deliberate, like the insect creature in a spaceship that crashes on this planet and then has its brain replaced, that sort of thing. I think, though, the Harmony Shoal are a great monster. I like them on TV, and I think it's great to get them on audio as well. I think they work really well, and it's quite cool getting them in this. I really like the Sixth Doctor and Mel story as well, because it's almost a sort of mashup between... It is a mashup between The Girl in the Fireplace, and I think there's a lot of Time Works in it as well, which was an Eighth Doctor Charlie and Carey's story from way back when in the main range. Felt very reminiscent of that, and I like that story a lot, and it was nice to play in that sort of territory. I'd mentioned as well that I had been waiting for a while to get a classic Doctor versus the Silence story, and here we get two episodes of it. It's a two-parter with the Seventh and Eighth Doctors, not necessarily in that order. I liked that one. I think there were times when it pitched itself, I felt it was written to be more seriously executed than it actually was. I think there's one or two voices in it that sound a little too silly for me. And I wish they had made it feel slightly more grounded and slightly more realistic and a little less. I think they almost tried to make it comedic, if that makes sense, or throw in a few lighter elements. I think they just should have really leaned on the noir tone that it was written in. And that would have been good. But I think the relationship between the Doctor and the Silent Priest in this is great. I think the Silent Priest's a really well-rounded character, more than I expected for that particular monster. And I'm looking forward to hearing these stories again now that I have my head more around what they're doing. I always find it maybe takes me one or two listens to fully appreciate some of Big Finish's stories. It takes me that little extra time just to wrap my head around what they're trying to do, what it's meant to look like, what it's, you know, what's happening. And I'm looking forward to doing that with these two stories. I like the idea of them doing this little multi-doctor. It's not even a multi-doctor story, but it's a story that involves multiple versions of the Doctors sort of interacting across their incarnations without meeting. I like that we are getting a, you know, one doctor sets a story up and another finishes it. You get it out of order in this case. It doesn't necessarily have to be that way. You're getting it with Suntarans versus Rutans as well. I think it worked well, and I think it kept up a high standard that the classic Doctor's New Monster sets have. Certainly I have come to associate with them, so very, very pleased with this set.
Yeah, I can only echo that, really. I did particularly enjoy the sort of, I mean, it's fair to call it a two-parter, the two-part silent story at the end. And it was a two-parter for characters that weren't the Doctor, really. There was a different Doctor in each part. The first part had the Eighth Doctor, and the second part had the Seventh Doctor, kind of dealing with consequences of things that he hadn't done yet and couldn't remember dealing with in the future because it involved the silence. It's a great concept. It's a great idea. And really the only monster you can do that kind of plot format with. And yeah, I think it was an absolute winner. I thought it was a really engaging listen. I do think that the first part maybe outweighed the second part, purely because of what was going on. But I really liked how it meshed together. I really liked what they did with it. It was great to sort of get a tantalising glimpse, really, of what the Fourth Doctor and Sadie Miller's Sarah Jane are like. I'm hoping that there's like tons more recorded. I'm hoping we've got like 15 series in the bag with them and we can just keep listening to them forever because they were absolutely wonderful. And it's, you know, it is a beloved era of Doctor Who. You know, it's where we're at with season by season on this podcast at the moment. We've just done season 14 and it's, yeah, that sort of season 12, 13, 14, that run with the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane, it is just wonderful. They are such a good pairing. They're iconic for a reason. They're beloved for a reason. Sarah Jane was the character that came back in New Who for a reason. And it's just because of how well her and particularly Tom's Doctor worked. Like, don't get me wrong, she worked amazing with Pertwee. She was a great character from day one, but that sort of camaraderie that they have in seasons 13 and the first half of season 14, it was definitely present here. It felt like it fit into that era. There've been comments about Tom's sort of performance and where he was pitching it, and I kind of get that, you know, there are very, very different versions of the Fourth Doctor. Tom Baker did adjust how he played that Doctor quite a lot, so I can appreciate him not immediately recapturing that sort of season 13 feeling. But you know what? The relationship between the two characters was there. And for me, that was the important part with this, with it being the first one. We'll move on a tad and we'll move on to more Fourth Doctor. This is the first set of Fourth Doctor adventures, and so far the only set of Fourth Doctor adventures we've had this year, Storm of the Sea Devils, which was the story that finally gives us an introduction to Harry Sullivan returning and Naomi as well. And I really liked this. I thought it was a good intro. We'd kind of, you know, Naomi was in unit. She knew about the Doctor already. So we didn't have all of the usual, oh, who are you? Introduce me to this world of yours. Oh my God, it's bigger on the inside. We didn't have any of that. It kind of just gave us the opportunity to dive straight in, which I think is something we'll probably never, ever get on TV. You know, a new companion is always an opportunity to reintroduce the premise of the show to somebody. But somebody buying Big Finish, somebody buying the, is it 13th series of Fourth Doctor Adventures, they don't need that. And so I really liked that we were able to just dive in and have a really good, actually, Sea Devil story. The Sea Devils are only ever going to have one story. That's just the nature of them. It's always going to be that one plot. The humans are a bit bad. We were here first. But I thought this did it really well. It did it in an interesting setting. The Sea Devils weren't particularly the bad guys. It was one of those humans were the bad guys after all type ones, and I thought it worked really, really well. What were your thoughts on it, Connor?
I enjoyed it. As I said earlier, it's good to finally get Harry and Naomi's introduction, because as listeners, we're familiar with them already. You know, we've heard their adventures with UNIT and with the Seventh Doctor, and I think it's utterly bizarre that they have been released in this order. I cannot get my head around why it's happened this way. But here we are. We finally get their adventures with the Fourth Doctor, and they're pretty good. The Sea Devils one was great. I enjoyed it. I think the standout, though, was the second adventure in that set, which is called Worlds Beyond. And it's sort of, it's the Doctor and his new, you know, his new companion and his old companion decide to take a holiday and relax after their adventure with the Sea Devils. The Doctor doesn't particularly want to, but Harry and Naomi manage to convince him. And, you know, this spoiler warning, it obviously, because it's Doctor Who, it all goes to hell, and it's not a holiday, it's a very stressful experience. But the nature of where they go and how it works, sort of with the scenarios being pulled from their minds, sets up the possibility, and Harry and Naomi talk about it and discuss that what they've just been through is what the Doctor actually wanted. You know, that this adventure that they've had to go through, where they were expecting a nice, calm, relaxing environment, and these environments were going to be tailored specifically for them. The Doctor's isn't terribly exciting, and it's his, I think, where the threat sort of starts and where it comes from. And it sort of spreads into Harry's and Naomi's. Then they sort of wonder near the end whether this is what the Doctor wants, that he, you know, that the life that he leads is dangerous, yes, because he sort of wants that life of danger and excitement, and it's a really great little character moment, and I think it was played very well. I really loved that story, so big plus for that one, in my book anyway.
Yeah, I did love the ending of that second story. That was a really nice way to kind of, again, introduce Naomi to being a companion of the Doctor as opposed to the Doctor's world. I think that worked quite nicely. The only kind of problem I've got really is we've had two stories now with Naomi, one with the Seventh Doctor and one with the Fourth Doctor, where she's kind of separated from the Doctor, from what's going on. In both cases, she's quite a new companion. I kind of want her to spend a bit more time with both the Fourth and Seventh Doctors in these adventures. But we seem to be getting scripts that kind of separate her off. So maybe moving forward, and I know we've got obviously more stuff coming with the Fourth Doctor this year. No doubt we'll have more stuff with the Seventh Doctor before too long. Hopefully we'll get to see her spend more time with both of these Doctors, and we'll get to see how that relationship develops and differs. I really like the concept of having sort of two concurrent runs with different Doctors, but the same companions. I actually think it's a really sort of interesting idea and a unique one as well. We've not done this before. I suppose the closest we've got is had Charlie go from the Eighth Doctor to the Sixth Doctor, but this is something quite different. So it also works, I think, that one's a telecompanion and one's an original Big Finish companion. Sort of, you know, Harry's already had a set of adventures with the Fourth Doctor. We already know about Harry. I think that this is shaping up to be a couple of nice runs, really. You know, we had a lot of nice things to say about the Seventh Doctor adventures with Harry and Naomi last year. So, yeah, I hope both of these runs continue and do well. But Storm of the Sea Devils, very, very strong start to another era in the Fourth Doctor's life that we get to explore. And I always love finding somewhere new in the Fourth Doctor's run to follow adventures. Next up, I've already mentioned it. I'm going to mention it again. Torchwood. We've had some really, really, really good Torchwood this year. Highlights for me would be Sabotage, which is very quickly set up to be a sort of Ace versus Mr. Colchester story. We've had two stories with them working together, and this one kind of has them working separately. And all the way through it, we kind of get, no, they're on the same side. It's all going to be a big, clever Colchester plot. And yes, it is. Of course it is. But it's kind of great to have that relationship challenged. I do think these characters work together really well. And I do hope that there's room for Ace to be brought into continuing Torchwood should we get any more. And I really hope we get more. But yeah, Ace is just absolutely cracking, a brilliant addition to Torchwood. And the more we get, even if it is just Colchester and Ace adventures, one a year in the monthly range, it really is something to enjoy. The next one I want to mention would be Poppet, which is a nice, creepy Rhys story set sometime during the run. I don't think it's ever too specific. And it's really, really creepy. It's disappearing people disappearing from memory as well. And Rhys kind of gets tied up in all of this in a little town in the middle of nowhere where no one really trusts him. Rhys has had some really good stuff, but this is definitely, I think, the creepiest. And it's good that we're still getting stories with him. You know, we don't seem to be getting as much of the original Torchwood team anymore. I've not got a huge problem with that. You know, I do hope that some point down the line we'll have another Owen, we'll have another Tosh. But I like the fact that we're able to explore Rhys a bit more, to explore Andy a bit more. And they really are able to take on a life of their own with Big Finish. You know, they're not just the supporting characters they were back in the original series. They are sort of fully fledged. They're up there with Gwen and Owen, Tosh and all the others. So yeah, it's really good to see Rhys get another strong story. As I said before, everything Torchwood has been really good this year. There's not been anything to not enjoy, but these are just the two highlights as far as I'm concerned. Let's move on then to a fairly recent one, this, and another absolutely fantastic addition to the Sixth Doctor adventures. This is the Quin Dilemma. So this is the Sixth Doctor's equivalent of 40. We got 40 with the Fifth Doctor a couple of years ago. This is to celebrate the Sixth Doctor's 40th. And instead of sort of having a few stories across the timeline that sort of link together in the way that 40 did, this one essentially gives us a few stories all going on at once, because some characters from the end of the Sixth Doctor's timeline are kind of sent back across his whole timeline to try and capture him. So we've got a sort of an opening episode that sets things up from Jacqueline Rayner. We then have a couple of partly self-contained stories from Rob Valentine and Chris Chapman. And then we have the sort of finale that wraps it all up and brings it all together again, Jack Rayner. It's such a brilliant use of the format. We've essentially got four one-parters and a two-parter in there. Or is it two two-parters? And I don't know, we could discuss this till the cows come home. The point is, it's a really, really interesting experimentation with the format, and it's a really good way of doing it. It's hard to pick out a favourite bit. Like, the sort of overarching story that Jack Rayner writes is utterly wonderful. Rob Valentine does like a nice solid Sontarini two-parter in the middle. You'd have thought maybe we were Sontaran out a bit by now, but actually I'm quite enjoying a lot of Sontaran content. It kind of makes up for the first, was it 12 years of Big Finish where they didn't feature or something like that? Chris Chapman really did produce a couple of wonderful, wonderful episodes here. I think the Thousand Year Thor is probably the one that I suspect everybody will gravitate towards, and it's because it contains a really wonderful and heartfelt scene between the Sixth Doctor and Perry where they sort of discuss their fractious relationship on the Doctor's regeneration, and even that sort of infamous incident in the Twin Dilemma where he tries to throttle her. And it's just beautifully written, beautifully performed, and it's the scene that I so wish the Sixth Doctor era had got the first time round. It's something I wish we'd seen 40 years ago. It's just a wonderful reconciliation between two characters who we've seen a lot of wonderful things between You know, the Sixth Doctor and Perry are one of the great Doctor Who teams, and it's so nice to just spend a bit of time discussing the relationship or to see them discussing their relationship. I thought it was very, very, very well done. What were your thoughts on the Quinn dilemma, Connor?
I really enjoyed it. It's good, as you say, you know, to get that anniversary celebration for the Sixth Doctor in the same way we got for the Fifth. And it's the biggest thing for me here is it's great to hear a couple of different companions for the Sixth Doctor, because it feels like it's been quite male heavy for a little while, which is not a bad thing. But I'm a huge fan of Constance and Flip, and I think it's very long overdue getting to hear them again. I'm delighted we finally got this. And the very triumphant return of Lisa Greenwood as Flip. I'm overjoyed to hear her again. I'm glad she's back at the stage, even if this is, I suspect, you know, she's not in it very much. I think they maybe kept it light for her coming back in for the first time since, you know, since the pandemic. But it's wonderful to hear her again. I hope it's not the last time. I hope we get to hear more of Flip. I'm absolutely delighted we're back at the stage where, you know, we can hear even a little bit of her. Overjoyed to hear Flip and Lisa Greenwood again. And we get the mashup, you know, we get Mel and Perry and whatnot as well. It's a pity there was no Hebe. I think it would have been good to have her involved as well. Maybe it was a TV thing, maybe it was actor availability, I don't know, but we've, you know, it would have been nice. Not complaining, didn't detract from it at all. But I like that this sort of family reunion feel to the whole thing with Perry and Mel and Flip and Constance coming back to do this little story together. As you said, the 1,000-year thaw is probably the standout. That conversation between the Doctor and Perry is very, very long overdue. I certainly haven't come across anything else in Doctor Who, you know, TV or otherwise, that confronts his behaviour to her just as headlong as this does. And it's beautifully written, beautifully performed, and a very, very valid conversation for the two of them to have, and a very needed one, and I'm glad it's finally been done. I think the Quins themselves, you can tell them apart fairly easily. I think they're well performed, well written, you know, to keep them distinct. It's a decent story. It's a good anniversary celebration for this Doctor, and it's nice to have a little bit of a break. As good as the Hebe and Mel stuff has been, it's nice to switch into something a little bit different for the Sixth Doctor and to hear a few other voices, which, as you know, that's, I don't want to come that to come across as me complaining about Hebe and Mel, because I think that's been a great, you know, series. I think those have been great stories. It's been nice to hear someone else.
I put the lack of Hebe thing down to it being set before her, which I think's actually a good place to plop it. Otherwise, the Sixth Doctor's era starts to get very, very heavy on revisiting companions and events happening and things like that. And I think that actually spreading it out a little bit works. This is still late in the day. We could still have pretty much anybody pop up in this. And I really do like the selection of companions we've had. Like you say, it kind of ventures around and brings us some we haven't seen for a little while, and it gives us an opportunity to do something with Perry we've not before. Honestly, I don't think this story at any point needed Hebe. It's great that we're, you know, we're getting her on telly, we're getting her in Big Finish. But yeah, I think this set was busy enough already. I don't think we needed the extra Hebe. And obviously the kind of big other missing thing from it was Evelyn, but obviously that's for a very, very different reason. But all in all, I thought this was a wonderful set. I'm really glad the way it turned out. And I'm really glad that it was a different format from the Fifth Doctor's 40. We've also got another Sixth Doctor set to come this year, and I'm really looking forward to finding out what's involved there. Shall we move on?
Let's.
Let's. Let's move on then to a very recent release. This is the Fifth Doctor Adventures, The Dream Team, which at the time of recording, it's been out for less than a week. You'll have had it for a tad longer when this goes out, obviously. But I just thought this was great. I really enjoyed it straight away. The Merfolk Murders struck me as just such a fantastic, enjoyable story. I enjoyed The Dream Team as well, but I believe you've not heard that yet. So let's save that for another time. But talk to us about The Merfolk Murders.
I have very recently sort of got into, and it's through the Kenneth Branagh films, but I've recently got a little bit into Poirot. And I've read, I've only sort of started making my way into the books, but I've loved those films. I've seen a little bit of the TV series. And I'm quite keen on that sort of style of detective story. So this is definitely very Christie inspired. There's a little bit of Sherlock Holmes in there. There's quite a bit of Sherlock Holmes in there as well. And I liked it. I did like it. I thought it did some really good character work, certainly with Adric, and with Nyssa and Tegan as well. It's nice hearing that team. It's maybe weighted a little more in Adric's favour than the other two, but I think there's enough there, certainly, to make it feel very chunky and well done in relation to Nyssa and Tegan as well. But I like Adric's. It feels like a sort of burgeoning, like, romantic relationship for him with it's Henry, isn't it? I think was the character's name. But it spoiler warning, it obviously turns out to be a little more tragic than that, and not to be, obviously, because obviously that's not how Adric left in the TV series. But I like that there was no alien influence. I like that it was just... It's like a longer version of Black Orchid, and I think it's a more serious version of Black Orchid. Black Orchid feels a little bit comedic and tongue in cheek at times. This feels like it's properly playing in the detective story sphere. And I enjoyed it. I think the Fifth Doctor stuff continues this sort of quiet and understated, being very good and maybe underappreciated, possibly in comparison with some of the louder ranges around it. But I think they've just been really good standalone little stories so far, which is a vibe I'm very much here for. And I like this a lot.
Yeah, I think that when we've said it before, and we're going to keep saying it, the Fifth Doctor Adventures are really strong at the minute. They've been sort of quietly just rattling away in the background. You know, there's not been any big, I guess, signature releases since 40. There's not been any big storyline-based stuff like we've had with the Sixth Doctor. There's not been anything like the Seventh Doctor's Last Day. They've just kind of been getting on with it, you know. Here's Fifth Doctor and a couple of TARDIS teams you love. Here are some really good, fun adventures. We seem to be putting a lot of purple on the covers, but, you know, carry on, that's all good. And yeah, the Fifth Doctor adventures have been a bit of a highlight, and I'm more excited about listening to new Fifth Doctor now than I think I ever have been, you know, certainly since the Mark arc. Yeah, this is really, really good stuff. So long may it continue. I really like the setting. I really like the time period that Merfolk Murders was set in. I thought it was interesting to do a story during the war, but not a war story, you know, part of the world that was obviously affected by the war, but not as dramatically as it was at other times. And I really liked the sort of epilogue at the end of the story, where they kind of jumped forward 20 years and just had a chat with some of the characters. And, you know, were you okay after what happened? You know, there was a horrible series of influence, and it was nice to see that these characters sort of did carry on and did have a future and did get over being wrapped up in this horrible event. And it was a really nice touch and something we don't often get in Doctor Who. But yeah, really nicely done. And like I say, I really enjoyed The Dream Team too, but I'm not going to spoil that for you. So that's kind of our roundup, really. That's some of the stuff we've been listening to over the last few months and enjoyed in particular. Missing something off this list doesn't mean we've not enjoyed it. It just means that we've not had time to talk about it. But I think what we've had here is a really nice, solid set of highlights. And there seems to be a lot of really good stuff set to come out while we're off air, as it were. So before we go, before we sign off our second series, let's just talk about some of the big finish stuff we've got coming in the next few months that we're looking forward to. So what are you looking forward to most, Connor?
So much. So at the time of recording, it's the middle of April. Next month feels very chunky. We have the return of the Eighth Doctor, Liv and Helen, who are my absolute favourite TARDIS crew ever. So really can't wait to hear them again. We have the Ninth Doctor and River Song. So this feels special, not just because it's the Ninth Doctor and River Song and it's Christopher Eccleston and Alex Kingston, which is, oh my God, the best cast in anything ever. But it's her as his companion for three episodes, which is the first time since Ravagers that the Doctor has had a companion for more than one episode. Very long overdue. Cannot wait to hear it. We also have Missy and the continuation of Morbius. Very excited to hear Missy. The Fourth Doctor, Harry and Naomi stuff is continuing. Excellent lineup of villains. I cannot wait to hear that set. It has Jeffrey Beaver's Master back and Annette Badland as the Celestial Toymaker. So, oh my gosh. You know, so soon after the Toymaker was on TV, we're getting a big finish story, and it's Annette Badland playing them. Andy and Norton are coming back to Torchwood. Seventh Doctor Last Day. Just, there's so much coming. This is just the 2 months ahead. I cannot wait to hear that. And I'll cap it off with Goth Opera, because it's the first time that we're getting a novel adaptation that I have actually read the original book of. I've read Blood Harvest and I've read Goth Opera, and they're just about the only New Adventures and Virgin novels that I have read. So it's very exciting to get a story that I'm familiar with being adapted for audio. Bring that on. Very excited. And that's just in the next 2 or 3 months. It's not even looking at the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think it's... you're right. There's just so much coming up in the near future. We're getting more Liv and Helen. I know we've only had a year off, but like I can't get enough of that TARDIS team, and I'm glad that it's kind of got a life after Stranded. I was really worried when Stranded was on, sort of going up into that fourth set, that this was the last time we'd get to spend time with these characters, and I'm glad that we've kind of had this little, not quite at the very end of Stranded yet, but pretty much there, run, and I'm glad it's continuing. I'm sure that one day we will see the thing that makes Helen decide to go back and stay in London. And I certainly hope we get to see some stuff that's just the Eighth Doctor and Helen solo, some continuing stuff. But I think for now, I'm more than happy with just getting more from an almost perfect TARDIS team, really. You're absolutely right. You know, Missy, Ninth Doctor and River Song. I'm looking forward to Dark Gallifrey continuing. I really don't think I can comment on it yet, which is why I've not done this episode. I enjoyed the first bit, but it was very much the first bit. It was setting up for something, and part two and part three of Dark Gallifrey Morbius will obviously bring us that. So I'm looking forward to that continuing. Anything Gallifrey related, I'm all over. We still don't have a lot for the Seventh Doctor Adventures Last Day 2. We've got a cast list. We know that some characters that weren't in the first set are going to turn up, but we still don't have a cover, and we still don't have a huge idea of where it's all going to go. So I'm kind of interested in seeing what we're going to get there. I enjoyed the first part. I know a few people kind of weren't all over it, but I really enjoyed what it was setting up, but felt as though it was a lot of setup and it wasn't as cohesive as it could be. But it's unfair to judge it on six parts of a 12-part story. It's kind of a shame there's been a big 6-month gap between the two, really. But hopefully when part two comes around, I can stick them all together and enjoy it as one big 12-parter, and hopefully it'll all work out. Last thing I'm going to mention is Tarrant, because I was a bit concerned Big Finish were done with Blake Seven. I was a bit concerned that maybe they thought they'd got all they were going to get out of it. And thankfully, we have got more. And Tarrant's a character they haven't sort of looked at individually since the sort of the whole cast continuation finished. So I'm glad that we're kind of looking at a character that has, despite being an original character in the series, is actually quite underexplored. We know a lot more about Villa and Callie and Jenna than we do Tarrant. So yeah, Tarrant's a really good character to zero in on, and hopefully it'll lead to some more Blake Seven stuff and Big Finish. But it's been a good 18 months since the last release, so I'm glad that now we're finally getting something else and it's not too far away. And that's that. That's our second series. We're done. We've talked about an awful lot. This is going to be a bit of a bumper episode once it's all edited together, but we couldn't go without one last sort of tip of the hat to Big Finish and one last discussion about Telly Doctor Who, really, could we, Connor?
Absolutely not. I've loved doing this series. I think I think I'm not going to be able to cope until we come back. and I'm looking forward to getting back into podcasting later on in the year.
Well, we're not going to be lazy. We're going to be recording in the background while we're off air, just not about recent releases and that kind of thing. But we will have more season by seasons coming up, more coffee bars, I'm sure, and no doubt we'll pick on a few sets to talk about. Plus, there'll be an entire TV series of Doctor Who to discuss as well.
Yeah.
So I think like the first half of Series 3 might just be, here's what we missed while we were off. There seems to be an awful lot coming up very soon, just as we've decided to go off air. But we have been doing this pretty solidly for 2 years. As we said, we've done over 100 episodes now, so I think it is time to have a little bit of a rest our vocal cords and ears as well, and see what we can come up with for when we come back. So yeah, we've not fixed the date in yet, but we're looking at sort of July, August, I think. So that is when there will be more spodcasting.
Maybe one or two other surprises as well.
No doubt. Of course there will. So that's our second series. We will leave it there. So a big thank you for joining me for this last one, Connor.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure as always.
There are podcasts out there where the sky is burning, where the seas are asleep and rivers dream. People made of smoke and cities made of song. Somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, and somewhere else the tea's getting cold.
Because you the don't coffee, drink coffee. The coffee.
The coffee's getting cold. Come on, Connor, we've got work to do.